We've had a great week of ministry here at Northside. If you missed the family game night, you missed a lot of fun, a lot of laughs. Sometimes you need to ask Miss Barbara, when single men want to be free, what that means. Because that cleared our table off real good right there. So she was great. We had a lot of laughs and a lot of fun with that. And we're going to redo that again at the next cycle of growth groups. We're going to redo that. Love for you to go ahead and get on that website and sign up for the next coming growth groups. And love for you to think about leading or helping host a growth group. That would be really helpful to us and continue to expand our ministry. We have a significant amount of growth groups for the size of our church, but you can't ever have too many, honestly, because growth groups are the way that we literally multiply the gospel and disciple one another. And that's exactly what we're called to do. So I would encourage you to do that. And we had, last night we went to the Home of Grace. I go every first Friday of the month. And then my friend Jack Skinner just got an invitation to do every first Saturday. So he came with me Friday. And then Saturday night we went and did a chapel with them. And we got to take some of our ladies, four of our ladies. Did I count that right? Four ladies went there and were able to share songs and testimonies with them, and it was just a sweet, sweet night of fellowship with them. Y'all remember when they're here, how much energy they have and how much they love singing to the Lord, so that's just a lot of fun. It was just a great night of ministry, and I was very proud to be with some of our folks that just have a faith that's out loud and spoken, and did a great job. And then afterwards, we prayed with a number of them and lifted them up in their needs. They came to us for prayer, and that was really cool to see that ministry happen. So I believe God's at work in us, and we need to continue to look for opportunities. And so part of this goal that I have is in having a series, just looking at the miracles of the New Testament when Jesus did some really outlandishly crazy things that completely defy any laws of any science or physics or anything. It is just powerful to me how he did that and why he did that. And there's no bottom to the knowledge you can gain from miracles. I've taught this one miracle that we're going to look at today from John chapter 2. I've taught it dozens of times, maybe even more than 100 times in my lifetime, in all kinds of settings. And yet each time I go back through it, I grow and understand a little bit more, and I experience a little bit more of what that event was like. And so today, I want to encourage you to turn to John chapter 2 and just remind you, Jesus did miracles so we could see his power. Part of it just reveals him to be not just man. He was born of a virgin. So Mary figured out real quick, he's not just a man, he's a God man. But a lot of people would not understand that and didn't take her word for it, didn't believe her. And so Jesus, when he actually came into full ministry after his baptism with John the Baptist, began doing, now this is important, occasional miracles. He didn't do tons of them. We only have about 8 days of Jesus' life recorded out of his 3 years. And I'm kind of like Mark Lowry on that. I'm like, good gracious, God himself showed up on earth. Couldn't somebody have kept a journal of every day of his life? Couldn't we know, kind of like, wouldn't you like to know what he ate for breakfast and lunch and, you know, when did he skip meals for fasting and all that? I mean, wouldn't you like to know the details? But we have 8 days recorded in span of his whole life. And of course, a significant amount of that is at the cross, and then some of his messages and sermons. But his miracles show up in very significant times when he's revealing himself, importantly, not just to the world, but to 11 guys. To 11 guys that are going to eventually change the world. And he needs them to gain understanding. And I would say to you, as the church, the body of Christ, the miracles apply to us, and they're for us as well. So, and then I'm going to ask you kind of at the beginning of this one, because I've entitled this one, How Big Can You Dream? Because there's something in this story that's a little bit unique to me that I've realized, kind of different. And so what I'm going to ask you to do is bow your heads for a minute and just in your own mind, I want you to envision yourself in your own mind, heads bowed, eyes closed so you can get your focus. Think about yourself 5 years from now, 5 years from now, and envision your life 5 years from now. what that would be like, what you hope for, what you believe in, what you're dreaming about for 5 years later than you are now. The maturity, the growth in whatever part of your life you want to grow in, the spiritual and emotional, financial growth, whatever all that is, career paths or whatever. Now I want you to go 10 years out. For some of you, that's a risk, but go 10 years out. It's a risk in several things. Go 10 years out and just imagine 10 years from now, you know, what you're going to be doing on a regular basis. All right. And now, back to the Scriptures, okay? Because you got your dream, and that's going to come in real important when we get to the end of this. So I want you to see something that I think Jesus was trying to teach us very early in ministry with Him, okay? So John chapter 2, verse 1, first miracle Jesus ever does. John 2, verse 1, on the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there. Jesus and His disciples had also been invited to the wedding. This is written by John the Beloved, Jesus' closest disciple, His youngest disciple and His closest disciple. And I love how he explains who attended the wedding. He doesn't tell you the bride's name, doesn't tell you the groom's name. The people he's related to at the wedding all tie to Jesus. And so he just uses that whole concept. Jesus, Jesus' mother, and Jesus' disciples. He's like, it's all about Jesus, even though it's a wedding. So it's pretty cool. When the wine had gone, Jesus' mother said to him, to Jesus, they have no more wine. Verse 4, dear woman, why do you involve me? Jesus replied, my time has not yet come. His mother said to the servants, do whatever he tells you. Nearby stood 6 stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing. Each holds from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, fill the jars with water. So they filled them to the brim. He told them now to draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet. They did so. And the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where he'd come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, everyone brings out the choice wine first and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you've saved the best till now. This is the first miraculous sign Jesus performed at Cana in Galilee. And he revealed himself, his glory, and his disciples put their faith in him. So part of his manifestation here at the end is so his disciples would go, oh, okay, wow, he's different, something special about him. And they would bring their faith to a new level with Jesus. And so let me just give you some history here real quick about weddings. Weddings at this era of time in Jewish culture lasted 3 to 7 days. Those of you that have endured or put on or helped or served at a wedding, I think I'm in the 80s, 80-something weddings I've served in. Weddings just wear us out as Americans. I mean, we almost die in the process of trying to prepare everything for that one special, 35-minute deal and, hour-and-a-half deal out in some fellowship hall. We just, there's all this panic and decoration and all this kind of stuff. The Jewish culture was, hey, just start spreading the word and we'll start the wedding. And when you get here, we're just having family. And it's just keep coming in and you keep coming in and people travel. It takes them several days to get there, but it would last 3 to 7 days. And lots of family and friends would come by to celebrate. The whole point was to have a week-long celebration that anybody could get off work and get to and celebrate the union of these two families. It was kind of an ordinary wedding that's described in John chapter 2. It's an ordinary wedding. It's the normal everyday lives of this town, Cana, is having just another wedding. It's an everyday common event, very ordinary, with one extraordinary guest that was brought in by Mom. Mom brought Jesus because Mom apparently was invited to the wedding. She's the one on the inside circle that gets told about the wine situation. And I'll tell you why that's important. So I love to tell you this. Jesus visits ordinary people and he helps ordinary people. You don't have to be extraordinary or unique or different to get help from Jesus. And I've had people tell me before when I was counseling with them to try to give them some encouragement that God wants to help them is they're like, well, I'm nothing special for God to help. And I'm like, that makes you all the more special to God. He loves plain and simple, ordinary people. It's an ordinary town, an ordinary setting, and a bunch of ordinary people, just real commoners. And then they have this problem that they run into. And the problem is there's no more wine, not a little more, not like we can stretch it anymore. It's just done. We're out. Whoever's checking the wine at this party, and there would have been several servants that were responsible to kind of keep up with the inventory of everything. At some point, they check that. They come back to the family and say, hey, where's the rest of the wine? You know, whose house is it stored in? Whose basement is it in? Whose cellar did y'all put it in? Where's the rest? And there's a, oh my gosh, don't tell me we're out, because that the last time y'all came, that was the last of it. And we're only a few days into this wedding. We believe 3 days in. So we're halfway there and we're out. We're done. And you say, well, that's not a big deal. You just announced to the guest, we're, hey, bad news. You know, you're going to have to eat without drinking because we don't have any more wine. We're just kind of out. Not any here, no way to get any. So the problem in this culture is, especially as Jews, the Jews were very proud people, and the Pharisees had made extra religious rules and laws for themselves in their culture. And they had legislated a couple of things that aren't in the scriptures at all, but they were realities to the Jewish couples. And when a Jewish couple throws a party, any kind of party, by the way, but a wedding was high up on that list because it got tons of attention because it lasted for a week and people all over the town were, you know, broadcast and told about it and then kind of spread the word and invited in. If you throw a wedding party and you run out of any refreshments, food or beverage, as a Jew, you would be fined the husband's first year's salary. Okay, so your husband's first year's salary now has to be given to the temple. That's the fine, the Jewish temple. The Jewish Pharisees are going, hey, we got a way to make money here. And it keeps us having integrity in the community. We don't throw stupid parties. We don't throw parties where people go, oh, that was a bust. Right? So the Pharisees had this law that if you threw a party and ran out of beverage, now you've got to give your whole first year's income to the temple in full. And they're going to enforce that, right? That's why this is such a big deal and why Mary secretly has to go to Jesus. It's not publicized that this happened, or this couple would have just been in trouble and there would be no story to tell, because once it's found out there is no more wine, the party's over, the, you know, ticket's written, and now you got to pay the temple. So secretly, somebody gets word to Mary that in the family, in the core family, as part of the wedding, gets word to her that we've got a big problem. And it's not a little problem, it's a big problem. There's no more wine. Zero wine, as I say. And so Mary, John 2 verse 5, says the greatest, to me, one of the greatest lines in the whole Bible. It's literally the answer to all life's problems. People climb all these mountains in Asia to find the answer to life's problems. And people go to spiritists to, you know, crystal balls. One of our things on the Family Feud. We were trying to figure out crystal balls. What is it? What is that? What do you call that thing? But people go to spiritists to get the answers to life. Well, John 2 verse 5 is the answer to all of life's problems. When Mary goes to Jesus and says they have no wine, Jesus says lovingly, if you have a King James especially, it sounds like because he says, woman, what have I to do with thee? Okay. He's really saying, ma'am or mom, respectfully, it's not time for me to do what you're thinking. She's thinking, just poof some into the room and we're good, you know, because you're like the Son of God. You can do anything. I mean, she's really just like, you know, just you can do like magic tricks for everybody. Have everybody gather around, hold their cups out and go pink, you know, and that would be awesome. Kind of a Penn and Teller moment. We just need you to be that. And Jesus is like, no. That's not me. It is not time for that. By the way, this is his first miracle. So it hasn't been time for any miracles yet. Any miracles. And Mary knows we need help. Now, something in the conversation, and I believe we probably have only a piece of that whole conversation, but something in the conversation between Jesus and his mother communicated to his mom but I got this for you. I'll help you, just not like you're thinking. Because her next sentence is the answer to all life problems. She calls some servants together and says, whatever he says, just do it. And that's exactly the answer to life's problem. Whatever Jesus says, just do that. And you can't go wrong ever doing what the master says. So Jesus calls these servants together. Now, there's a whole bunch of servants at a wedding like this. Both families would have had groups of servants. Some of them would have been their personal servants that were part of their household. They may have hired other servants in. Mary would have traveled probably with several servants with her. It might have been her personal servants that she whispered to, hey, whatever he says, do it. But we've got a group of servants, a handful of folks, probably guys and girls, younger in age, maybe older, that are supposed to be serving Jesus now, whatever he says to do it. And I want to make this note because this one stands out to me really strong these days. Jesus had to be asked to help. Jesus had to be asked to help. He's at a wedding where the wine runs out. And he's not just going to run over there and go, hey, I know you're all about to run out of wine because I know everything. So, you know, I'm going to help you with that. He literally waited on the request from his mom to step in. And I'm going to say to you, James chapter 4, verse 2. You ought to write that in your notes right here. James 4, verse 2. We have not because we ask not. I am probably top rung guilty of saying, well, Jesus knows my needs. Why do I need to ask him? Because in the Bible it says, we have not because we ask not. And in John 2, in the middle of a crisis in a wedding, there's this, all this part, you got to think of it as somebody's house. It's probably in a nicer home, a little more roomy than the little tiny one room things you think of in that day. But they're having, you know, out on the courtyard and out under the balconies and everywhere, you know, in this two or three level house, they're having all these laughter and fun and everything else. But deep down inside some room somewhere, there's a bride bawling her eyes out. There's a mom of that bride and a dad freaked out. And there's a groom thinking, well, we're done for. I mean, my whole salary's gone. How are we going to live through this next year? What happened? And we're trying to figure out are you sure that it's all out? Did we check everywhere? And there's all this panic in the deep core part of this family wedding where all the other stuff's just quietly happening and fun. There's a deep panic somewhere. That sound kind of like life for us sometimes? There's everybody around just happy, and so you go out and you're just happy. But deep inside, there's something going on. But Jesus was invited to help that deeper core issue. He didn't just jump into it. He was invited in. And I just encourage you that some of us need to learn to actually say in our prayer time, Lord, I'm inviting you to help me with this. I'm begging you to come in and help. And whatever you say, I will do. You know, I'm not just praying words to you like, oh, Lord, please help, but I'm not going to participate. Because what's going to happen here is somebody's got to participate with Christ for this to be pulled off like it is, magnificently, by the way. So here's the problem. There's no more wine. And Jesus has the answer, and he has to be asked to help. And then he just uses ordinary, everyday items to help. He looks over on the side of the room where he's at, and he sees 6 water pots. Larry brought me a book back from Israel. And the pictures are really, I tried to take a picture on my phone of the picture and put it up there, but it's really not, didn't come out real good. But he gave me a picture of these water pots in this book. There's a picture of all this kind of stuff from over there. And I showed it to my son, Josh. I was thinking it was like a clay pot. Like we make, you know, clay pots that we put plants in. This thing's made out of stone. And it's 30 gallons high. I want you to think of a Tupperware trash can made out of stone, like concrete stone, okay? And Jesus looks at those water pots, they're lined up along the wall. Tells you, by the way, it was a big party, because there's a lot of foot washing going on. They were set there to cleanse your feet. When you come in the room, your guest, your host is supposed to wash your feet for you, or make sure some servant washes your feet. That's just hospitality back then. So kind of like today when we just welcome people in and go, hey, just throw your coat over there. That's us. We don't wash anybody's feet anymore because we're not that good. So, but they would actually wash your feet because they were all dirty from traveling the roads for as long as you've been walking. And there's six of them, and just put 30 gallons in each one. Six times 30 is, that's 180 gallons, okay, capacity. And Jesus says, see those water pots? Fill those up with water. Right? Now, y'all have heard me tell this before. If I was one of those servants, we'd have a little problem right there. So first of all, I'd want to know who put him in charge. And they go, well, Mary. I go, well, who put her in charge? And I go, but did they not explain to her, we don't need water. We don't need water. We're missing wine. And by the way, those things are stinking heavy. And there's no water hose that's going to go inside the house through a window and drop into that and fill it up. We're going to have to lift that thing up on our shoulders, struggle to carry it out a door. We're going to have to put it on some sort of cart, or maybe, if we're lucky, somebody has a donkey with a thing that you can hang it on. And we're going to have to take it to the well at the end of town, which is a hole in the ground, by the way. It doesn't have a spigot either. And we're going to have to pull buckets of water out of this very muddy well. We're going to stand in mud for hours, pulling buckets out and dumping them into this jar that weighs 1,000,000 pounds all by itself. A gallon of water weighs 8 pounds, roughly 8 pounds, right? So each jar, just the water, is going to weigh how much? 30 times 8 is? Say again. You mathematicians are so good. 240 pounds. I don't even know what concrete at that level weighs. Okay, I know we moved a bunch of concrete yesterday, 1,200 pounds of concrete yesterday to put some goalposts up at a new park we're helping build. So, but I know concrete weighs a lot. Okay, and if you have a concrete container that can hold 30 gallons, I'm just going to roughly say that's 150 pounds of concrete. Okay, so 240 plus 150 is 390 pounds, right? Now, Jesus is looking at some servants who, by the way, have been working all day. Matter of fact, all week. Servants are never off. A servant to a household is never, it's a 24/7 job. And we're not just having a regular week at our household. We're not just having like, you know, the in-laws came over and we have to clean everything and fix it. We're having a party with all the relatives, in-laws and outlaws, okay, and strangers, and the mayor's going to come by, and the governor's going to come by, and somebody important from somebody's business is going to come by, and so everything's got to be perfect. These servants have been working tirelessly, but hard, and they are exhausted already from just all the chaos of the wedding itself, the party itself, and then this guy shows up and says, hey, you see those very heavy water pots? They're going to be almost 400 pounds when you finish them. I'd like you to take those down to the well. Fill them up and bring them back. Right? That doesn't make any sense at all. So I want you to hear a couple things about the servants. They were very tired. They had to work very hard. They didn't know the entire plan. Don't you like to know the whole plan? When your boss tells you to do something, don't you want to go, why are we doing that? You know? And if my brother's your boss, he goes, I don't know, just do it. Right? I mean, you bosses know how to say that. Stop asking questions. Can we just do what I'm asking? And here's Jesus with his mother giving advice to the servants. Whatever Jesus says, do it. And here are the servants going, six water pots. Okay. I don't know what the plan is, and we sure don't need more water. By the way, some of the water pots would already have water in them. They don't let them go empty. I'd be like, we got water. We don't need water. Why are we doing this? But these servants were willing and obedient to do what Jesus says. It actually says in the verse, I love how John writes this. Jesus said, fill the jars with water. And the rest of verse 7 says, so they filled them to the brim. Now, Brother Michael, if you and I are out there trying to get water out of a hole in the ground with a bucket and filling up a clay jar, one bucket at a time, And every bucket we put in there is, you know, put 10 pounds. There's 10 more pounds. There's 10 more pounds. There's 10 more pounds. When you get it up to where it's around near the top, because you gotta carry it back on some animal or, you know, however the world you're getting it back. And you know it's going to tossle and turn and spill a little bit. So you go, well, that's good enough. That's all I need to. We don't even need water. Wouldn't you have an argument with the other servants and go, we don't even need this water. I don't even know why we're doing this. That's not how this is portrayed at all by John. John says, Jesus said, fill them up. And they went, gotcha. They went down to the well, filled them up to the brim. 6 water pots, 400 pounds each. How much weight is that? 6 times 400 is? 2,400 pounds. By the way, there's no forklift. There's no, you know, tractor going to carry all that. At some point, it's got to get off that donkey and into the house. And that's 3 or 4 guys, you know, trying their best to get it in there and sitting it down without crushing their fingers. Sweating, mud all over them from being down at that well. Long, hard, complicated work process. And here's Jesus saying, just go do that. Now, then Jesus says to the servants, and I think this is also a faith moment for them, because it took faith for them to go take those jars and fill them up. It took a lot of faith. Now here's Jesus saying to the servants, now I want you to take the water to the head waiter. Take the water to the head waiter. Well, the head waiter's waiting on wine. He's probably the one that started this whole process, by the way. He's probably the guy that said, hey, you know, it's been a while since we've put the next set of wine out. Somebody go get me some more wine and let me taste it so I can make sure it's not soured or bad. He's probably been waiting for a long time for that guy. And the servants that are at the house know there's some sort of secret thing happening, and they're trying to figure out how to keep him dancing around all that. They're working their magic around the boss. Don't tell the boss. Don't tell the boss. Don't tell the boss. You know, just keep him busy. Go tell him we need him over here and get it. You know, somehow they're keeping it from him because all of a sudden now Jesus says we got the water back. Take the water to the head waiter. Well, if I'm a servant, which by the way is an unpaid position, I'm a servant. I'm a slave from another country probably. That's been fortunate enough to be adopted into a family that won't kill me all the time. And I'm fixing to hand the head waiter, a guy we're paying to run this whole system, I'm fixing to hand him a cup of water when he asks for a cup of wine. You think my job's stable? Nope. I mean, at best, I'm going to be taken out back and lashed to a pole. You know, I'm maybe locked in the barn all night. Something bad's about to happen. And so God bless, when we get to heaven, we probably get to meet this guy. God bless that guy that went, I got this. He takes that cup and he dips it in the water that he got from the well. He knows what's in the jar. It's water. It actually says he takes it to the head waiter and the water was turned into wine somewhere in that process, hands it to him. And when the man tastes it, here's what he says. Oh, this is the best wine I've ever tasted. Isn't that cool? Jesus took water from a well and turned it into the best wine the wine taster guy had ever tasted. This is the best ever. Man, you guys have saved the best for now. I like what Mark Lowry says. Mark Lowry says, isn't it cool that Jesus' first miracle was just to keep the party going? Because the party was about to end. I mean, the party was over. We're out of wine. Everybody got to go home now. And Jesus' very first miracle was, no, keep the party going. By the way, it's about 3,000 cups of wine if you want to do the math. 3,000. So you can figure out how big the party was. You know, you got 3 more days of party and you got 1,000 cups a day of wine we're going to serve. You know, and they didn't drink wine like crazy. Like I drink sweet tea. You know, I can drink a gallon of sweet tea at lunch. They don't drink wine like that. So, and then if you just want to know whether I think it was fermented or unfermented, okay, and if you're Baptist, I'm very sorry, but I believe it was very fermented. I believe it was really good wine. I believe it was fun wine and fun party time, okay? And if you're Baptist, you can come up here and argue with me on that. If Terry Chupp gets this on the podcast, he will come argue with me because he does it every time we talk about it. So, because he's very Baptist and Jesus doesn't serve alcohol to anybody, okay? Sorry, he did that day. You fermented the wine because it was the water was full of stuff that would kill you, and it was a way to keep from killing anybody. And so Here's Jesus serving this magnificent wine into this party moment. And all of a sudden, not only is the party going to keep going, we just got the best wine ever. Can you imagine when they started pouring that for everybody? Everybody got a little taste of it and they're like, oh man, this is awesome. Man, you guys are great. What a party. What a family. What a great couple. Can you imagine the change that happened when Jesus invested in that? So here's what I like to do. I'm going to do the formula now. Here's what I like to do. You guys have seen me do this before, so I need some volunteers. I need somebody that would be willing to be a nothing. Like your life is a zero. You feel like a nothing. Looking at all my youth. And Ms. Barbara, you want to be a nothing? Okay. I need a nothing. Anybody? I'm just going to borrow you for just a minute. Here, my nephew, Annie, that looks terrifyingly like me, is going to be the nothing. That's perfect. So Andy is a big fat zero. Okay? I'm the fat one. He's the big zero. Okay? So he's a zero. Zero. Nothing. Okay? Now, in this formula, we say zero plus, and what Mary did was added Jesus. So, sorry, I'm ringing out here. So, but Mary added Jesus, and I need a Jesus. Anybody volunteer to be a Jesus? Yeah, Cody's been Jesus before. It's actually written on his arm, so. Does Cody want to volunteer to be Jesus one more time? Okay. Yeah, that's right. Voluntolding, as you say. So, zero plus Jesus, because that's what Mary did. She went, oh my gosh, we have zero wine, right? So, zero plus Jesus, right? And then there had to be some willing and obedient servants. I need two or three of you just to come stand right here. Doesn't matter who. I just need volunteers. Be brave, be bold. There is no pain in. There's a willing servant, a willing servant. Three, look at the men come to the... Wow. Y'all give them, that's awesome. Three willing and obedient servants. Four willing and obedient servants. Okay, that's awesome. When Jesus took those four servants, zero plus Jesus, hold your hand up, Jesus, plus the willing and obedient servants. I'm so proud of our men for volunteering. That's awesome, okay? Plus willing and obedient servants. The results was... You ready for this? Greater than that family could have ever accomplished or dreamed. That's what the results are. It took me a while to look at that story and figure out. I was like, well, the results were they got great wine. No. They didn't just get great wine. They've already served, according to the head waiter, what have they already served? Their very best. Think about this. This young couple and their families have got together and said, all right, here's how we're going to do the wedding. All the planning, 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 panic, 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 planning. People are coming. We got to get everything ready, get everything ready. Oh, you remember all the wedding stuff, right? We're planning, planning, planning. And here's how, this is the best wine we have. So make sure it gets out first, all right? So talk to all the waiters, talk to all the servants. This goes out first. This is the best we have. So what have they already put out? Their very best. But Jesus showed up. They were just putting out their ordinary best. And when Jesus showed up and gets involved, right? But he didn't get involved by himself. And this is the first miracle. This is the first miracle. Now think about this. When Jesus performed his very first miracle, you know what he could have done? Just what Mary was thinking. He could have just looked at those water pots and said, he could have said to the servants, hey, go draw some water out of those water pots. There's a little bit left in all of them. Go draw some water out and take it to the head waiter and just watch what happens. Nobody would have had to serve. Nobody would have had to sacrifice. Nobody would have had to get more tired. And there would have been this little miracle called water to wine where it's just Jesus and water. That's not how he does his miracles. You know how he does his miracles? He involves people. And he says, if you're willing and obedient. You don't complain. You don't gripe. You don't whine. You don't actually say, I'm just too tired, Jesus. I can't do it anymore. And I'm saying to a church of people that are serving hard, we say we're tired. And when I looked at this story, the servants in this story are very tired already. It's okay to be tired. Tell Jesus you're tired, but you will still be willing and obedient. You're still going to do what he says. You're not going to stop obeying him. You just may have to do a little slower, but you're going to get there and get it done. I mean, I can get the water back fast, but I'm going to the well and I'm getting the water just like he asked me to. Now, when Jesus is added to the zero, by the way, if you're emotionally bankrupt, you could be that zero. Maybe you're having an emotionally exhausting life and crisis, so this is your zero. Maybe you're having maybe your bank account, praise Jesus, hallelujah, I'll testify. Maybe your bank account is running at zero, okay? Your finances are at zero. You get that? You know, maybe you're having, your job future is a zero, and there's just a lot of zeros in our life. There's a lot of nothing. I just have no resources. I don't know. I have nothing. Nothing plus Jesus plus willing and obedient servants equals greater than the couple could have ever dreamed about. You understand how that works? They didn't dream of serving that kind of wine at their wedding. They pulled their best out already. And that was their little dream. Oh, when we have our wedding, this is how we're going to do it. This is our dream. Remember when I asked you about your dreams? I think most of us dream here because we forget that we can put Jesus in a dream. And if we will be willing and obedient, the dream is, here's what it says in Ephesians. He will do exceedingly abundantly above all we ask or think. Above all we ask or think. The couple just needed wine now, right? Jesus could have served bad wine, by the way, because we've already served the best wine. So he could have went, I'll just whip some wine up, a little ripply or whatever, So I can just do a little something to just get it done. It's not Jesus. Jesus made the best wine ever. Y'all thank them, will you? Y'all, great job, guys. I'm expecting great things out of my four servants there. Andy, you don't have to do anything because you're a zero. So the point is, the couple had given their best to the guest already. And then when Jesus stepped in to help, they could do greater. When Jesus stepped in to help, their ability to make a great party improved. Their ability to host their friends improved. Their ability to do it all improved. So I just want to remind you in this first miracle moment that Jesus counted on people to help him. So let me take you through a couple of bonus truths. My son says we get to call these to the millennial generation. A bonus truth is what they call an Easter egg, okay? It's the post-Easter egg sermon. So the movie's over, the credits are rolling, and now we're going to go to the Easter egg moment where we're going to show some little secret thing, okay? Here's four things I want to get you to wrap your mind around. One, God loves working with nothing. He loves working with nothing. There's a passage in Job where it says he hung the earth on nothing. How do you hang anything on nothing? Anything. I mean, how do you hang a pair of slacks on nothing? You can't do that. But Jesus can. He hung the earth on nothing. He just took the earth, the marble that we call the earth, and he put it out in space and he went there. Hang there. And there it is. It says he can measure the earth in the span of his hand, so it shouldn't be hard for him. But you understand, he loves working with nothing. Matter of fact, nothing is one of his most favorite materials to work with. I love the story in the Old Testament where the widow says to the prophet, all I have is this little oil, it's nothing, it's really nothing. And he tells the widow, I want you to go into the village and get all the empty jars you can get. Well, I already have empty jars. I have a closet full of them, by the way. That's why we're fixing to eat our last meal and die. That's the widow. We're fixing to eat our last meal and die. But the prophet says, go get a bunch of nothing. Because you know why? God likes nothing. He does a lot with nothing. You ever feel like a nothing? Raise your hand if you feel like a nothing. We did this last night at Home of Grace. You ever feel like a zero? Feel like you can be nothing? You can accomplish nothing? Well, here's the deal. In the big scheme of things, nothing is a perfect, perfect platform for God to do His greatest work. It's the perfect platform. And I just want to encourage you that just because you feel like a nothing or you feel like you have no resources or no value, God can use you mightily. Because when that widow went and got a whole bunch of jars of nothing, She went into her pantry, and the prophet said, take that little oil that you think is nothing, this is nothing oil, and start pouring it into the emptiness. And he took out of all that nothingness that she collected, he made her life, there was enough resource for her to live the rest of her life on. Isn't that beautiful? Because God can do that kind of stuff. He loves working with nothing. Secondly, the servants had to sacrifice. And I'm just telling you, if you just meditate on what those servants did that day, in the middle of already a crazy, crazy time, life's at 100 miles an hour, you know, the air conditioner business is 100 miles an hour, the survey business is 100 miles an hour, the mechanic business is 100 miles an hour. We're working as hard as we can work, Life's crazy, crazy, crazy. We're repairing as much as we can. The restaurant business is crazy, 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 crazy. In the middle of all that craziness, Jesus goes, hey, I need you to step out and help me with something. I need all of that, all of those big, heavy pots. Take them down the well and fill them up. Well, that's going to be exhausting. And so you go, well, what was the benefit for the servants? Well, let me remind you, this is a secret miracle. Jesus told his mom, I'm not doing this like you think. I'm not going to have everybody hold their cup up and pop it in. We're going to do this quietly. So, and it says at the end, he manifests himself to the disciples. He revealed himself to his disciples. Well, who else knows? The servants. The guys that went to the well. They know beyond a shadow of a doubt that there was a guy at our party when we went and got water because he told us to, which didn't make any sense. We didn't know the plan. And we sat water down. He turned it into the best wine anybody had ever tasted and blew our minds. So what's the deal with serving extra hard and laboring hard and sweating through it all and being high sacrificial in your servant? What's the deal with that? You get to see Jesus do work when you live like that. I promise you, you will see more miracles if you will serve more faithfully. You will see more miracles. I guarantee it. When you're very tired, just find a way to, you know, pick yourself up a little bit longer and push yourself a little bit harder and serve our living God. And you will see more miracles. I wonder if you're willing to see those miracles regularly. Because it means we've got to have the ability to do that. And when you see a miracle, it's life-giving energy, man. When you see somebody transform, when you see something crazy miracle happen, it just gives you tremendous energy in God. And you go, man, that was awesome. That's amazing. That's what the disciples go away with. That's what the servants go away with. Bonus truth number three. Easter egg number three. Jesus doesn't need us at all. Like I said, he could do the water to wine without anybody's help, but he chooses to use us. He doesn't need us, but he chooses. He's chosen Northside. He's chosen Northside. He's chosen Northside to use our growth groups as a way to reach more families, as a way to encourage relatives and neighbors to come into a growth group and get to know you. He's given us these opportunities that we didn't have initially. We have 19 growth groups this last cycle. Okay, that's 19 different inlet places that people can get involved in learning about heaven and hell, truth and lies, and learning about life and death. And salvation in Jesus Christ and His grace and His love, so they don't ever have to experience His judgment or His condemnation or hell. We have the opportunity to do that. And He chooses to use us. And I'm saying, please take advantage of those things. And number four, sometimes miracles require us to do the hard work of exercising full obedience. This is important. You don't get anything else out of this, Northside. Jesus didn't need somebody doing a halfway job that day. And when he picked those guys, when those guys volunteered, when Mary volunteered them, how do we say that, Cody? Voluntold them. When he voluntold, she voluntold them, you're helping him. And he said, fill up the pots. They filled them to the brim. And that I've been studying, kind of working on a little series that I may put together, but I've been studying the halfways and the all the ways of the Bible. People that do things halfway, people that do it all the way. By the way, when Joshua went into the promised land, remember Moses died and Joshua was going to, or he went up on the mountain and died, and then Joshua was going to take the people across Jordan River into the promised land. Remember that? He's got millions of Israelites he's got to take in there. And there's this giant city named Jericho that he's got to wipe out. But Jesus, or God actually tells Joshua, wipe out all the enemies. And he gives him a list of them. There's three cities Joshua never, ever completely wiped out. And he did it intentionally, by the way. It was one of Joshua's greatest weaknesses. He left three cities standing. Gaza, you ever heard of that before? The Gaza Strip, where all of the controversy resides in the Middle East around the Gaza Strip, right? Gath, he left Gath standing. And Gath is where Goliath is from. 300 years later, David would have to go as a little boy and face Goliath because Gath was one of the cities that Joshua left standing. He didn't do his whole job like he was supposed to. Isn't that crazy? I've been studying a little bit of that about all the way. That's why I put it in here. We have to exercise full obedience. When Jesus tells us to do something, do it fully. And then just wait on the results. Trust in the results. Have faith in it. You know, you don't need to try Jesus. Don't test him. Just obey. Just obey. And let him do the miracle work that comes out of that. And that's in every area of your life. In every single area of your life, just obey. The Bible tells us we should regularly open the Scriptures and read them for ourselves. You should have regular devotions. The Bible says we should regularly have private personal prayer, and we should have corporate prayer times. We have a Saturday. We don't ever advertise this, but we're going to try to start that because I keep forgetting to start that. But we every Saturday at 5 o'clock, we gather right here and have a prayer time. I just used to do it by myself, and then eventually people started joining me, and now we just have a regular 5 o'clock prayer time. We stand in here, we put on music, and we pray all over the sanctuary by ourselves individually. Then we come up here and hold hands at the end, and one of us says a prayer, and we're all praying for the body of Christ at Northside. We're praying for you. And you're all welcome to that, by the way. If you believe in the power of prayer, it's a great opportunity to be here. If you don't believe in the power of prayer, come try it. Give it a shot, because Jesus says we're supposed to do that stuff. He's not just, you know, giving you ideas. He's saying do that. Jesus says we should love our neighbors. Meet your neighbor. Get to know your neighbor. Tell your neighbor about Jesus and the grace that saved you. Be a neighbor to your neighbor. Love your neighbors, your coworkers, your family. Reach out to them with the gospel. He tells us to do all that. And so full obedience means full obedience. If you want to see miracles, it's going to require some full obedience. Amen.